Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Red and White podcast brought to you by Chronicle SCFC. I'm host Craig Johns, and I'm joined here by our two Sunderland EFC reporters, James Hunter and Stuart Rayner. Yesterday was, of course, a busy day for Sunderland Football Club. We started with a report suggesting that the takeover involving the three US investors from MSD Partners had collapsed. Not long after that, we then had news, confirmation that manager Jack Ross had been sacked by the club after 11 games into the new season. And then we had Stuart Donald say that the takeover was still ongoing. So it was a very interesting day for Sunderland. All on top of that, we also had the Leeson.com trophy game against Grimsby, which Sunderland won 3-2. But I don't think there were too many people overly concerned with matters on the pitch last night. But yeah, so throughout this podcast, we will, of course, come on to talk about the takeover, and we will go on to talk about what next for Sunderland. But I think it's logical to start with the one thing we do know, and that is Jack Ross's dismissal yesterday. So we'll start with you, James. Obviously, you work very closely with Jack in his 15 months at the club. What were your thoughts on his dismissal?
I think it wasn't entirely unexpected. Obviously, the pressure had been growing over a period of time on him, and fans have become frustrated with some of the results and quite a few of the performances. I think the timing of the decision, though, was very, very strange. 72 hours after losing at Lincoln and just 5 hours before the Grimsby Town game, it didn't seem to make any sense unless you have a replacement ready to go. It didn't make sense to me. I think actually it's quite harsh on Jack Ross when you look at his overall record. He's got the third highest win percentage of any Sunderland manager in history. Okay, he fell short of winning promotion last year. In effect, it's one game. It came down to the playoff final at Wembley. You're one game away from winning promotion. This season, we're 11 games in, it's a quarter of the season this year, of course, 44-game season. And they've lost two games out of 11. It's hardly a terrible record. Of course, Sunderland had high ambitions this year, high hopes to win automatic promotion. And that's still very much a very realistic possibility. They're sixth in the table right now as we speak, but they're only 4 points away from those automatic promotion places. It's certainly ground that could easily be made up over the next 33 games. It smacks to me of a bit of a panicky decision from the owners. I think we've seen that one of the things that goes hand in hand with having owners that are open and communicative with fans, and Stuart Donald having a presence on Twitter, means that obviously you feel the pressure from fans in a way that previous owners, and not just at this club but also other clubs, they don't have that influence. And obviously the fire had started to turn towards Stuart Donald and the owner, and I think that's what's caused the tipping point and caused them to pull the plug on Jack yesterday.
Stuart, your thoughts? I mean, do you think it was the right decision? Or
I do. I felt it had become a necessary decision. I agree with a lot of what James says about Ross's time as manager. I think probably as time goes on, I think he'll be looked at more favourably than he was. I think he did a fantastic job. I think you've got to remember the club that he inherited, and I think people lose sight of what a mess it was and the important job he did in stabilising it. Now, I mean, he set out all the way through last season that it was all about winning automatic promotion and that's how he should be judged. And ultimately he did fail in that. I did feel, I said at the time, that I felt even though he had failed, I thought he'd done enough to earn himself a second chance at getting promotion. And I do think that the start to the season has been a good start to the season. I just felt that he needed a very good start to the season given the pressure he was under. But really the way I look at it is almost whether you feel Jack Ross was the right or wrong man for the job has almost become irrelevant, because the fans clearly didn't feel he was the right man for the job, and they're such a powerful force for good or for bad that once they turned against him, it just felt untenable to me. It felt to me like a game at Bolton Wanderers where the supporters turned. From that point on, it felt like just a matter of time. And I say, whether you believed he could turn it round or not, the fact that he wasn't able to persuade supporters that he was the right man just made it feel to me that it was a matter of time before he left.
Mm-hmm. I'd agree with that. The only thing I would say is that the problem is, and we've spoken about this, Stu, is you reached a stage where you felt Jack Ross could win 4-5 games in a row and things might go quiet, but then the first time you lose a game or draw a game or there's a bad performance, then it would all come back again. And I get that's what you mean by a necessary decision, but that seems like you've really got a manager on a hiding to nothing. And if you're in a situation where you can't win over fans by winning games, then I wonder where we've arrived at in football.
I think you're absolutely right in principle. You know, I think, you know, the sort of morals behind what you're saying are absolutely right, but you just have to deal in realism. And, you know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, we've seen over the last couple of years how corrosive it can be when the Stadium of Light is negative. And we've also seen flashes over the years, you know, under Sam Allardyce, under Roy Keane and what have you, how positive a force it can be when they're behind a manager. And it just felt, as I say, as though they'd lost faith in this manager and they weren't going to get it back. And, it, you know, it's sad to say because he did do a good job, and he was, you know, I know we'd agree on this. He was a genuinely good man, and it's really disappointing to see a good man and his family, of course, you know, uprooted like this. But under these circumstances, I just felt it was the right way to go.
I think, you know, you have to put the whole thing into context as well, and not just look at the manager's position in it. I think there's been a massive void in leadership around the football club, for at least 6 months, going back to April at the very least. In that time, we've known that the club has been essentially up for sale. Stuart Donald has been looking for investors or a takeover, and it seems that nobody has been able to take a grip and take long-term decisions. Everything's been very short-term. There's been no leadership. Jack Ross didn't receive any support, really. There was no strong backing, and I think that has an effect too. Jack's left facing the media 2 or 3 times a week. He's the one that's accountable and is the public face, of course. But he's not had any support in that. The structure that he wanted put in place and has been talking about for, I don't know, 12 months probably, of having some kind of director of football type figure or chief executive type figure, none of that's materialised. You look at the summer where there was a takeover that came within an ace of happening, Mark Campbell, and then fell to pieces at the last minute. That disrupted everything, meant that the summer was not quite a complete write-off, but it meant that Sunderland were late to the transfer market because all the plans that were made by Mark Campbell were torn up, obviously, and they had to go back to another set of a standing start, if you like, from the recruitment. I think that you have to see what Jack Ross has achieved and whatever shortcomings he has and there have been from him, and that's a perfectly valid debate to talk about those things. But you have to also look at the reasons why, rather than just say results aren't good enough, therefore the manager must go. You have to put it in its wider context.
I do think that uncertainty, you know, while there will be plenty of candidates, we already know there are plenty of candidates for this job, you know, you do worry that that uncertainty might just put off one or two candidates who you'd actually like to get in. So, you know, Stuart Donald's talking about providing some clarity at the weekend. I think it's really important that there is some genuine clarity so that, you know, people who want this job know what they're coming in for. But I think whoever does come in for this job, and this is what I mean when I say that perhaps people will look more favourably on Jack Ross over time, will benefit from some of that work that Ross has done, you know, in linking the academy and the first team, and just basically stopping a slide, which means that Sunderland could now be in the sort of position that Bolton Wanderers are in, when instead, as James says, they're actually very well placed, that if the right manager comes in, They're in a really strong position to push for promotion this season. This isn't the usual situation Sunderland find themselves in when they're sacking a manager of somebody who has to come in and save them from relegation. If the right man comes in, you know, they could well be in the Championship next season.
This is, you know, it's not a firefighting scenario, is it? It's a case of building on the foundations that are already in place.
Mm.
So it is a very different kind of appointment. You know, I think you're entirely right with that. I think just to go to what you're saying about the clarity around the situation, it's a little bit like even when Ellis Short was in charge. If you remember, he was trying to sell the club for ages, nothing happened, and eventually he reached a point where he said the club's no longer for sale.
Yeah.
Now we all knew that wasn't quite the case, but he felt that until he could end the uncertainty by saying something, then it was very difficult for the club to move forward.
And we saw that, didn't we, in the summer after relegation. It took right until the first day of pre-season for them to appoint a manager just because of that uncertainty. And it's really important that they don't get sucked into that same trap again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think it is definitely fair to say that with circumstances going on at the club, it certainly hasn't helped Jack Ross.
Mm.
But just assessing the group of players that he has now at Sunderland, the 11 games we've seen in the league this season, should he have been doing better, do we think?
I think there's a case to say that he should. I don't think he's massively underachieved. But I do think, for example, if you look at the League One records of Will Grigg and Charlie Wyke, he didn't get them back to those levels. Now, whether that's physical problems with them, whether that's mental problems or whatever, that was a conundrum he wasn't able to sort out. I do think, and I took a lot of stick for saying this a couple of weeks ago, I do think he's actually made a bit of progress, or had made a bit of progress. I think they're better defensively than they were last season. I think the midfield balance is better. And certainly those are arguments to say that they should have shown him more time. But I personally get the feeling, I think, It's oversimplistic to just look at wage bills, because thankfully, even today, football is not decided by money alone.
Yeah.
But there are obviously a lot of advantages Sunderland have as a League One club in terms of the resources that they've got available to them. And Jack Ross's critics would certainly say that a club with those sort of advantages ought to be top of the league. Well, whether they should be top or not, I think they probably should be better than sixth. But having said that, you look at any football season and people always say it's about how you finish, not how you start. He'd given them a start where if they'd continued to improve, as I've just said, you know, another manager could come in and lead them to promotion. So, you know, it's a bit difficult to assess anyone 11 games into a season, because a season's not about 11 games. But personally, I do feel he slightly but not massively underachieved with this squad.
I think it's a very hard thing to assess, you know, just how good a squad is at this stage. My own feeling is that the squad this season is actually not as good as it was last season. Last season, Sunderland finished fifth. Obviously, since then, players like Lee Catamol and Brian Oviedo and George Honeyman and Reece James have gone. And what has come into the club are four free transfers, two loan players, paid a little bit of money for George Dobson, but not very much. So certainly the players that have come in, you could argue, have not matched the players that have left. So you could argue that this squad isn't as good as it was last season, because the resources weren't there to replace those players. I think that this squad, notwithstanding that, this squad is capable of challenging for promotion, capable of challenging for automatic promotion. And I believe it will challenge for automatic promotion. And I think that would have been the case if Jack Ross had stayed, and it will be the case under a new manager. We won't know until the new manager comes in if he makes a dramatic difference, if he suddenly gets significantly greater points per game. Then we can say that Jack Ross was underachieving and this manager has, you know, got more out of the team. But we won't know that until we see how somebody else does. It's very difficult to say with any degree of certainty.
Yeah, as you know, Craig, I'm a cricket fan, and there's a saying in cricket that you should never judge a pitch until the two teams have batted on it. similar with this squad. You should never judge this squad until two managers have had a crack at it, I suppose. Then we'll have a much better idea, as James says, of just what it is capable of.
Mm. Yeah, you mentioned when you were talking earlier there, Stuart, you felt like there had been a bit of progression this season. You felt like that defensively, and I do agree with myself, they look stronger defensively than they have this season. But of course, in the league at least, that clean sheet still eludes them.
Yeah.
And of course, at the start of the season, Jack Ross was very strong on the fact that that had to improve from last season. He felt that was the downfalls of last season, was the lack of clean sheets. And to be this far in 11 games and still no clean sheet, that has to have gone against Jack Ross, you feel, doesn't it?
Yes, definitely. I mean, that will be one of the factors that counted against him. I mean, it's true to say that Jack Ross set himself certain targets that he didn't meet, and ultimately they were his downfall. I mean, when Stuart Donald first came in, he was a bit cagey about what the team should expect what the club should expect from the team in its first season, talking about a top six finish. But Jack Ross came straight in and said, no, we should be aiming for top two, and applaud him for having that ambition. But ultimately, he fell short by his measure, not Donald's. And again, it's the same with the clean sheets. You'd like to think over the course of the season that those improved performances we were talking about would be rewarded with maybe some better fortune, and that by the end of the season, the clean sheet record might represent the defensive work they were doing. But it is undeniably true that they were still vulnerable to just switching off at key moments, and that was costing them. And that must be a real frustration for a manager, because concentration is a really difficult thing to coach into players. I mean, that's one of those things where they cross the white line and it's kind of out of your hands, really. So, at moments like that, Ross must be looking at himself thinking, well, this defence needed more pace. I brought more pace into it. This defence needed more certainty at fullback. I've done that. I've done my part of the bargain, and I've just not had the rewards. And I think that's one of the sort of paradoxes about Ross's reign. There are areas where you think, well, oh, they've done better at this, or they've improved in that respect, and it's not always been reflected in the numbers. As James said, he had the third highest win percentage of any manager in Sunderland history, and yet that kind of wasn't reflected in the mood towards him. He always got labelled with this tag that he was a cautious manager, but if you look at the number of goals they scored, that wasn't reflected, and yet I still think that was actually a valid criticism, and Ross would always point to the number of goals they scored, and the fact that they haven't kept a clean sheet, while it's not what he wanted, it kind of added into this narrative of his that actually they were quite positive. But you look at those individual numbers and it just didn't match the feeling you had about that team at times, and I think that was the problem he came up against.
I guess in the interest of balance, we've mentioned the win ratio, the third highest. Of course, many would point to the fact that Sunderland are in the third tier at the moment under Jack Ross, which most of the managers, certainly all but one, wouldn't have been in that tier.
That's true, but whichever level you're in, Sunderland are in League One, but they've got a League One team. So the team is appropriate to the level that they're playing at. So, yeah, okay, you can say, well, other managers were in the top division, but they had a top division team.
Yeah.
No, that's fair, yeah. And we've mentioned kind of tactics. I mean, there's been a lot of criticism towards Ross from the fan base about his style of play, and one of the common ones in games was kind of going 1-0 up and then falling back. We looked at it, didn't we, Stuart? The Rotherham game a few weeks back, they went 1-0 up very early in that game, missed the Aidan McGeady penalty, and then in the second half, the heat map was quite notable on the on how much the kind of went backwards in that game. And, I mean, is that a fair criticism of Ross? Is it such an important thing if he wasn't drawing so many games and Sunderland were winning so many? Do you think there would be such an issue with the style of play as such?
I doubt it, ultimately, because, we've talked about results not being the be-all and end-all, but, ultimately, I think if Sunderland had gone up last season, then, people would have been happy and justifiably happy, and they weren't a million miles away if they'd just turned some of those draws into results. But I mean, even that I found quite a strange one, because we criticised them and Jack Ross criticised them quite legitimately last season at times for not being ruthless enough. And, the Rotherham game was another example of that. But I look back on the games against Rochdale and Accrington in particular this season as games where they were really ruthless and they didn't play as well as the opposition, but they won through their ruthlessness. So you look at that and you think, well, that's a step forward from last season, and that's another positive for them. But you know, at the same time, those who were sort of negatively disposed to him were beating him with the stick. Well, they hadn't played as well as the opposition in those games they should be. And then, say, having shown that ruthlessness, they then take a step backwards in the game against Rotherham, as you say, which is a game where they really should have put it to bed, and they didn't. So it's a really difficult one, because even in that respect, they were quite inconsistent. So it was difficult to judge, really, you know, to what extent they'd made progress or fallen behind in that regard, from my point of view.
Yeah, it was, but there was always the feeling that this team could and would improve, and to have got to where they are sitting right now, having not been particularly brilliant in the first 11 games, to put it mildly, was always the feeling that they could improve from here. I think if Sunderland had been playing out of their skins up to now and were sixth, then you'd think, well, how do you get more out of a team that's playing out of its skin and is sixth?
Mm.
But if they've got a team that's been a bit inconsistent and, you know, certainly hasn't hit top gear, but that team is sixth, then you think, well, this can improve from here. I mean, Sunderland had just kept the first clean sheet, hadn't they,
at Sheffield United.
They just got Joel Lynch and Lawrence De Bock into the side, and they just got what I think is fairly certain to be something like their first choice back five, and that could well be the case for the rest of the season. They'd only just got that together.
Yes.
It worked in the Sheffield United game. It didn't work at Lincoln when John McLaughlin made what for him is a very, very rare mistake. And then all of a sudden, of course, the rug's pulled from under you. I don't know. I think what it, basically it becomes, it's about results. If you don't get the results, then people will criticise, and understandably so. If you do get the results, though, and at times this season Ross has got good results, like the five match, then it seemed that people then turned on the performances. Mm. Getting the result wasn't good enough if you didn't get the performance as well. And in all honesty, there are not many teams at League One level that can play very good football every week and win every week. You know, Rochdale were excellent against Sunderland.
Mm. And look where they are.
And they lost against Sunderland.
Yeah.
And look what's happened to them since. So it's great playing wonderful football, but it's no good if you're not getting results.
Mm. I think from my perspective, I think the thing is, if you looked at this season in isolation, I think you would say, as James has said, they've laid a good platform and you would hope they would improve. I think the issue for Ross was that people weren't looking at it in isolation because it was his second season and his first season had ended in disappointment. I think, as I said earlier, a good start to the season was not going to suffice for him. I think from his point of view rather than the team's point of view, I think they needed to be quick out the blocks and setting the pace to buy him the time to then have that improvement.
The 2-1-1 draws didn't help in the first two games, did they? Because it just felt like a mirror.
That's it, though. But, of course, you know, the first real murmurings against Ross this season came after that second of those 2-1-1 draws, which is the 1-1 draw down at Ipswich. Ipswich are top of the league by 4 points. They haven't lost a game all season. All of a sudden now, when you look back in October, a 1-1 draw at Portman Road doesn't look like a bad result.
Yeah. Mm.
But at the time, it was treated as though it was the end of the world.
Yeah, I mean, there was a real element, wasn't there, James, of damned if you do and damned if you don't. Because, say, last season, we were criticising them, and I think we were right to criticise them, for playing well and not getting the results. And then there have been times this season where they've not played well and got the results.
Yeah.
And neither has cut the mustard, you know. No. And as James says, this is a League One team. You've got to be realistic about what you expect of these players. They're playing at League One for a reason. You know, many of them are not that consistent. You only need to look at the results pretty much all the teams have had this season. You've seen teams conceding 6 goals 1 week and then winning the next. That's the nature of the division. And, you know, I think sometimes we need to temper our criticism a little bit and bear in mind that these are not the quality of players, as James was alluding to earlier that previous Sunderland managers have had.
There's only a few players in the Sunderland squad that have played above League One level. The likes of Grant Leadbitter being the obvious one, but there's not too many that have played at and Aidan McGeady, of course. But
yeah.
There's not too many that have played many games above this level. There's a few that have played a few games at Championship level. You know, John McLaughlin and Will Griggs had a few games at Championship level, but not many. So it's quite short on real quality and experience. These are League One players trying to get out of League One. I think it's become quite a, as you said, there was an atmosphere of damned if you do and damned if you don't, and it seemed to be that when Ross was coming under fire, anything he did was wrong. He couldn't make a right decision. So it became even about silly things like whether he had his hands in his pockets or not. So he got criticised for having his hands in his pockets, but he would have got also criticised if he was waving his arms like a windmill. He got criticised for calling off the Fleetwood game this weekend, but if he'd have played the Fleetwood game this weekend and not won, then people would have said, why didn't you call it off? You had three players, it was a risk we didn't need to take. Any little decision, even tiny little things like whether to put your hands in your pockets, became an issue and a talking point, and you know that when that happens, the narrative has changed against you, and you're swimming against the tide, and it's very difficult to do that as a manager. It's very, very rare that any manager, any club, never mind Sunderland, has the fans on his back in that way and then manages to win them over.
Which is my argument for saying, well, sad though it is, they just had to cut their losses and change the narrative with a new manager. But let's say that's something that fans will be discussing between themselves for some time now, and there will be differing opinions.
And actually, I think it will turn out to be, in the long run, a good thing for Jack Ross. He'll be better off with somewhere where he's got a fresh start, where, the work that he did at Sunderland will be seen and viewed and appreciated by, the people in the know and the football side of it. We'll see what he's done at Sunderland. And he'll be able to make a fresh start without all that baggage that came.
And I would expect him to do well in his next job. I think, he's a very intelligent bloke. I think he'll learn a lot from his Sunderland experience, take that into his next job. And I say he is a good manager. I do believe he'll be a success elsewhere. It just felt to me as though it wasn't going to happen at Sunderland.
I'd be better off, a more stable football club, a football club where there's more stability and where there isn't this cloud of uncertainty seemingly over the club for such a long time. I think you'll thrive in a more settled environment.
Yeah, and kind of just to wrap up the section on Jack Ross, a successful manager it does not make, but I think we'd all agree he was a very nice man, a very personable person to be around as well, wasn't he?
Decent human, very, very decent man. And whatever you think about his football, whatever you think about tactics and all the football side of it, there's a human being in there. A man who wanted the best for the football club, who took time out to spend with fans and would go to great lengths to engage with supporters. It's very notable. I've written today about Jack was back at the Academy of Light to say his farewells. Most managers do that. They come in after they've been sacked or resigned to clear their desk and say goodbye. But what was different this time was the reaction of the people at the training ground. Obviously, depending on how popular a manager is, you could be a very cursory thank you, goodbye, and that's the end of it. But he addressed everybody in the training ground, and after he'd done that, I'm led to believe there was a queue of people outside his office waiting to see him individually. There were players, ground staff, catering staff, cleaning staff, Uncle Tom Cobley and all. Everybody wanted to go and sort of wish him, wish him well on a personal basis. And I think that speaks to the kind of person that he is.
Yeah, and certainly, particularly in terms of the off-field staff, don't forget, these are people who are well used to seeing managers come and go. You could easily become a bit hardened to it, but clearly he had an impact on them, and I know for a fact that, I've written things recently that he didn't appreciate. You know, it's the nature of our job sometimes that you have to criticise and reflect the fans' views. But from a personal point of view, you know, I'd just like to say I really do hope he is a success in his next job, because he was a genuinely good person to deal with. You know, he didn't bear grudges and that sort of thing. And I do believe he's a very talented manager and will go on to be a success. So I wish him all the best.
Yeah, likewise. I think we'd all echo those thoughts. But of course, now we have to move on as Sunderland, and the next job, which began today for Stuart Donald, is finding Jack Ross's successor. To start with you on that, James, I understand they have made contact with one particular candidate.
Yeah, I mean, almost the same time as Jack Ross getting the sack yesterday, Daniel Stendel was leaving Barnsley. He obviously led Barnsley to automatic promotion last year in his first season in charge. He was the EFL League One Manager of the Year. And my understanding is that Sunderland have already been in touch with him, made initial contact. He was one of the names that Stuart Donald had commented on and said that he would be a name under consideration. So things are, you know, are moving there. Doesn't mean that it'll happen. I'm sure he's not the only person they're talking to. Gareth Ainsworth at Wickham is another name that's out there. You know, so there are different people who are being linked with the job. But Daniel Stendel is somebody that's certainly in the running. He's attractive to the current regime because not only his record last season, and he likes to play good football, as we saw with Barnsley, but he's available for no compensation package, of course, which is attractive when we know that there's not a great deal of money at boardroom level, which is why we're talking about takeovers.
Yeah, I mean, it ticks a lot of boxes. That League One experience, you know, will be important. It's not the be-all and end-all. It didn't stop them appointing Jack Ross, but it certainly helps if you've been the course and distance. And he certainly had a difficult season this season, but that's on the back of losing his goalkeeper, his two centre-backs and his top scorer, and not having much by way of budget to replace them. So I wouldn't judge him too harshly on that. And it's worth pointing out that it's a well-known fact that this regime are a big fan of German football. You know, they came in talking about the Borussia Dortmund model, and Charlie Methven's partner is German. You know, they do appreciate German football. German coaches are all the rage in English football right now. He's certainly not the only candidate, but he is a strong candidate, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of that one, where do you think we are, James, in terms of, do you think he is the kind of top candidate now and that's why they've contacted him? Or do you think they're going to be contacting many people, kind of scoping them out, getting their ideas of where they would want the club to go before they're making a decision on who their top target is?
I would think they've got a short list. And I would think that, you know, Daniel Stendel ranks highly on there. He's an easy person to contact because you don't have to go through a club or ask for permission or agree any kind of compensation deal. So it's a very simple thing to do to get in touch with Daniel Stendel's people and go from there. But I don't think that they will just rush into the first name. It would be unwise of them not to you know, consider other options as well, because there's always the possibility that you know, things might not work out with Daniel Stendel. He might not want the job for some reason, or you know, an agreement might not be reached. So you need to have other irons in the fire. You couldn't just put all your eggs in one basket. So I think that you know, he's one of several names.
I think if you sack a manager on day three, effectively, of the international break, you do so to give yourself time to think. And it's not unreasonable to think that whoever's top of the list today might not be top of the list in a week's time. You know, we saw with Chris Coleman's appointment how the thinking changed and different candidates emerged. But yeah, at this stage, Stendel looks an attractive option.
Yeah, and in terms of if you were the chairman of Sunderland Football Club, Stu, what would kind of be your top traits that you were looking for, the top qualities of a manager that you would be looking for now to come in at Sunderland?
Well, personally, I would be looking for someone with experience, because, yeah, I mean, James and I were talking about this on the video last night with regards to Kevin Phillips, and James made the absolutely spot-on point that you take a rookie manager, of course it can work. It worked for, you know, Roy Keane was the last manager to win promotion to Sunderland, but it's a risk. You know, you just don't know which way it's going to go. And, you know, if Jack Ross you know, struggled at times with their difficulties of the expectation of this club, then, you know, it's a lot to ask of a new manager. So I think someone who's been there before is a big help. I think someone who knows the division is a big help. And that, again, that pushes you more towards a Stendhal or an Ainsworth than it does to, you know, a bigger name like a Sam Allardyce or a Roy Keane who haven't operated at this level. So I think that's important. I think the style of play is important, but not necessarily in a pretty passing sort of a way, in the way that, you know, Gus Poyet used to play, for example. I think Sunderland supporters like to see their team play with a real intensity and a high tempo and play exciting football, if not necessarily the most technical football. And I think that's something they should look for. And really, I say you're looking for a strong character, because it is a difficult job. There is a lot of criticism from the supporters and from ourselves, you know, and you have to be someone who's able to deal with that and still get the best out of yourself.
I think that's right. I think that you know, obviously the high profile names that have been linked, like Sam Allardyce and Roy Keane, personally I don't think there's any chance of either of those people or somebody of that ilk pitching up here. Somebody like Sam Allardyce would get better offers probably from the Premier League or at the very least the Championship. His salary would be unaffordable for a club in League One, any club in League One, and he would want a transfer budget to work with, and there isn't a transfer budget to work with as things stand here at Sunderland. So that kind of thing, I think you can forget about. Roy Keane's never worked at League One level. He was always a stickler for standards. He looked at the players that he was working with at Sunderland first time round and found that difficult at times, because they weren't the kind of standard of players that he is or was and
probably
and
still
worked
is,
with
he?
Probably still is. And I think he would find that very difficult in League One. Also, under the current ownership, I don't think that he would thrive under that environment. I don't think he would stand for that. So I think you can forget people like Roy Keane and Sam Allardyce. I as we were saying, Stu and I earlier, not to a rookie manager, it's a massive gamble. It could work, but it might not. I mean, if you've sacked Jack Ross because you think he's underperforming, do you effectively want to make your season a flip of a coin? Because that's what you're doing. You're saying, well, we're sixth in the table, we're in with a chance, so let's just heads or tails, and who knows what'll happen. Well, you know, that's no way to run a railway. I think you've got to go with somebody with some experience, someone who knows the division. I think that you know, you'd be looking at people that are tried and tested, and Gareth Ainsworth's done very well on a low budget at Wickham, and so he fits that category. And of course, as we were saying, Daniel Stendhal, who has won promotion from this league. I mean, he obviously went to Barnsley with no experience of League One, so
it can work,
but he was an established manager back in Germany. Already, whereas Kevin Phillips has only ever been part of the coaching staff at Leicester, Derby, Stoke, and even when managers have left those clubs, he hasn't been the person that's stepped forward as the caretaker, so he hasn't had even that sort of experience. I think that Kev will get an opportunity in management at some point. I think it would probably be very unwise for him to make that first step at Sunderland, because his legendary status as a player here at Sunderland would buy you a little bit of time, but it's very easy to lose that legendary status and you know, tarnish your legacy in that way if things don't work out for you. So I think that he'd be better off starting somewhere else, and then if he's successful, hopefully one day graduating to the Sunderland job. I think it's a very hard thing to do to start out there.
And you mentioned last year, in your summing up of what you would want, kind of somebody who can deal with the pressure. I mean, we do know Sunderland is this kind of hot pot, and Roy Keane, I'm reading Roy Keane's autobiography again at the moment, and one of the things that he says in it is that he knew straight away he was going to love Sunderland because for the fans, the results on a weekend quite often determine their mood for the rest of the week. If the team lose, they have a bad week the following week. If the team win, they have a good week. And Roy Keane says, I knew straight away I was going to love and I was going to thrive under that pressure. But that's not the case for every manager. Not everybody is kind of built in the same kind of way that Roy Keane is. And obviously he had to be because he played at a club like Manchester United for the majority of his career. But so I think it, just building on that, like the new manager has to be somebody with that kind of personality where he will be able to handle that.
Yeah, but this is the thing. I mean, you know, we've talked quite negatively in this podcast about, you know, the pressures of expectation that come with Sunderland, and they are undeniably there. But if you can get things right, the advantages of having that supporter base behind you are absolutely fantastic. And the very nature of top sports people, whether they be players, managers or whatever, they tend to have that self-belief that, oh, you know, all these other managers might have failed, but I can be the one who turns it around. And that's why, you know, people, and I don't mean this in an uncomplimentary way, but Roy Keane and Sam Allardyce are both very arrogant people. And that's a very negative word when used outside of sport, but in sport, that's a really important characteristic. And that's what made them successful, in Keane's case only briefly, but that's what made them successful at Sunderland. They came in, they believed they could make a difference, they got the supporters behind them, and they rode that wave, you know. And that's what the new man's got to do. And I say, if he can do it, then the rest of the league are going to be looking at him so jealous to know that they've got 30,000 supporters behind them at the Stadium of Light, you know, basically making the difference between wins and draws some weeks.
It's also an advantage to Sunderland, you would see it in their search for a new manager. I mean, definitely. When Chris Coleman came to the club, they were struggling in the Championship and things weren't going well off the pitch. You would probably never have imagined that the club would attract someone like Chris Coleman, who'd been very successful at Wales. And he came and he was saying, I know if I believe I can be the one after all the others who failed before me, I can be the one to turn this around. He didn't. Jack Ross came from St Mirren. He'd had many offers from Championship clubs before he came to Sunderland in League One. He said the same, if I can just be the one to turn this club around. That is an attractive proposition of Sunderland if you can get the fans on side and get the good times going, isn't it?
Yeah, it's usually there. You know, normally when Sunderland appoint a manager, which has happened all too often, I was just trying to mentally tot it up there. I think it must be pushing 20 now in my time here, 18, 19, 20, somewhere around there. I tend to at some stage in the manager's early weeks at the club, sit down and share a cup of coffee and have a bit of a chat about the club. And I've said to each of them that it's a very difficult job. It's a big club with big expectations, but the rewards for the right man, if he can get it going, are absolutely huge. You know, the potential and the infrastructure and the and all the different facets are there. And if you can get it going, I mean, I look back to the first manager I worked with here, Peter Reid, and remember those first two seasons in the Premier League under him, when the club finished seventh, was on the verge of European qualification, and you had Kevin Phillips winning the European Golden Shoe, and etc. You know, the place was bouncing at that point, and it's sad to see where it's come to. And but any manager that comes in, while it's a massive leap now, I say it's a massive leap. It's a gulf now, isn't it, between where Sunderland are, sixth in League One, to seventh in the Premier League. It's huge. But the point is, if you can get this club going back on the right trajectory again, if you can get this club in the short term back in the Championship, and then in the longer term start to look higher up the Championship and trying to challenge for promotion from there to the Premier League, you know, set yourself achievable goals. Don't rock in on day one and say we're going to be, you know, in the Premier League in 3 years' time, because you set yourself up to fail. You need to, I mean, of course, be ambitious, of course, but you know, set yourself achievable goals. Better to you know, to under promise and over deliver than to do it the other way around. And that's been the danger at Sunderland, I feel, certainly this season, with the owners setting a 100-point target in the summer. That's not a case of you know, under promising and over delivering. You were setting Jack Ross up to fail by doing that, and that 100-point target has been, you know, thrown back at Jack Ross all throughout these 11 games, and we knew that that would be how it would be viewed from the moment it was said in May or whenever it was. So you need to set yourself achievable goals, but for a manager that can come in and get things going again in the way that Peter Reid did, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, you know, the potential here is, well, you know, it's huge, isn't it? You know, we go on about it all the time, but it's there, and for a club to be getting gates of around 30,000 in League One, you know, it just shows the kind of football club that this is.
Imagine what it'd be like if they liked the style of football.
Yeah. Yeah, so just briefly before we then move on to takeovers then, not who you think will be the next manager, but just if you were the chairman, who would be the top man on your list? I'll go with you first, James.
Oh, wow. yeah.
Just because I could see you squirming.
So. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's one of these questions, isn't it? You know, do you go for a... you know, a realistic name to answer your question? You know, I could say to you, well, Daniel Stendel is a realistic person to get. Or do you go for something that I don't think is realistic? I mean, you could look at getting a promotion expert. You could look to Neil Warnock or somebody, but you're not going to get him to come from Cardiff, are you? So I think you have to treat that question with a sense of realism.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. So, of the candidates that I've seen that have so far been linked with the job, I think probably Daniel Stendel is the best of those. But as more people enter the running, you know, that may change.
Yeah, I mean, as you alluded to, we weren't really expecting Chris Coleman to be. You know, we I think it's fair to say we looked on Chris Coleman as an unrealistic option when he came, and suddenly he emerged. You know, I'd be leaning towards Stendel at this stage, but I think, because of all the things we've talked about, what a great club it is to manage, I think Sunderland could afford to be choosy. And I think it's a case of, you know, maybe picking five or six, getting them in for an interview and just see who blows you away, really. Because, it really does need somebody to come in with that sort of force of personality and, in, you know, sell themselves to Stuart Donald, not the other way around.
And isn't it funny as well, Stu, you know, we've said loads of times about clubs sacking managers that could end up doing a good job for them, and I'm not advocating that Sunderland, you know, go into reverse and reappoint people, but they had somebody in Simon Grayson who would probably be a very strong contender now if he hadn't been here and failed in the Championship.
Doing very well at Blackpool.
Got an excellent record at this level. That's and right. As I say, the only thing that probably rules him out of the job this time around is he's had a go already in a different division.
Interesting. Yeah, well, from the next manager to take overs then, of course, just before that Jack Ross news came, we did have the report saying that the takeover had collapsed. The report claimed that the collapse came because of Stuart Donald's valuation of the club. Stuart Donald has denied those reports. He says the talks are ongoing, and because they're ongoing, he can't say too much about it at this stage. But is it fair to say that things aren't looking as good now on the takeover front?
It's certainly a concern, I feel. I know that obviously things have gone from extremes, haven't they? I mean, what was it, a month or so ago, you know, the noises that were coming out of the club were that it was very, very close to being done, days away. It was a case of, will it be done tomorrow? Will it be the next day? Will it be by the weekend? Then it's gone from there to what Stuart Donald mentioned last week or the week before last, saying it's got a better than 50-50 chance. Then you go to what came out, I think it was initially The Sun that reported it, wasn't it? Yeah. That was saying that it had collapsed. Then Stuart Donald coming back and saying, well, it hasn't collapsed. But it was his words, his tweet was to the effect of, I'm still seeking investment. And you think, well, still seeking investment, is a long way away from days away from being complete, which is what we've been told a month ago. It certainly looks as though there's been a, I'd say a shifting of the goalposts. It certainly looks like something's changed within the deal, whether it's the price, what it is. We don't know, and I think only the people, you know, actually involved in the deal will actually know that detail at this time. But something has shifted at one side or another, and it's just added to this this uncertainty. I think, you know, in the bigger picture, to tie it together with where we started with Jack Ross, if the club was close to being taken over, I would assume that Jack Ross's sacking would have been you know, sanctioned by the incoming owners, and there's no sign or suggestion that anyone else was consulted in this.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't be human if you didn't get nervous at the amount of time this has been dragging on. You know, we know there's lots of loopholes to go through. There's lots of things to be checked out, and we know there's a limit to what people can say. You know, so it's easy to get over panicky. But, you know, these aren't stupid people, the FPP group. They made a very public show of being at the Wimbledon game, the two that were there, Phelan and Playtech. You don't do that unless you're pretty confident that things are going to happen. And that was late August now. Things haven't happened since. And, you know, while Stuart Donald has been very careful with his language, as James says, that language is not encouraging. You know, it wasn't him who was saying it was imminent, not directly in the press. That was sort of coming out via other sources. Yeah. But for the language to shift to better than 50-50, you know, as James says, for the
talk... rolled back, hasn't it?
Exactly. You know, from the talk to being about a specific group to being about potential investment, none of these things fill you with optimism. You know, hopefully he's going to come out at the weekend. He's going to be able to say a bit more and put minds at rest. But until he does, you know, it's only natural that people are going to be twitchy about it, and to say, not just supporters, of course, but also potential managers.
Yeah, I think, you know, people shouldn't necessarily panic at this stage.
Yeah.
But I think people are right to be cautious. I think we need to wait for firm information. Mm. And that can only really come from the owner. And he's promised an update, and so we're all waiting to see what that's going to be. It may be that the takeover is fine, it's just been held up. It may be that the takeover isn't going to go ahead in the form that it was agreed before. Perhaps, I don't know, I'm speculating here, of course, but maybe they're going to take a stake but not take over. Who knows? We really need some clarity, though, because at the moment the uncertainty means that there's no sense of stability and structure around the club. Everything seems to be in a state of flux, and I think any manager coming in is going to, well, at the moment, any manager that agrees to come to Sunderland doesn't know who he's going to be working for, and therefore what budget he might have, and all these kind of questions in just a few weeks' time.
I mean, in fairness to Stuart Donald, it's a week and a half ago he said we can expect some clarity in 1 or 2 weeks. Well, if we get it at the weekend, he's met that deadline, and say if that is the case, then there's a clear week, you know, to actually start negotiations with candidates, you know, and this period is just about sort of assessing the field. So we've all just got to hope not only that there is clarity, but that it's the sort of clarity that we need.
And I guess on the manager front, the one advantage is that the noises coming from the American side of things is that they would still want Stuart Donald to be there running the club day to day. So in some kind of insurance to a potential new manager, Stuart Donald should still be there, even if a takeover did go through.
So long as the unspecified potential investment isn't another party entering the race, because we know they've talked to Mark Campbell, we know they've talked to FPP, but we know they've talked to other groups that haven't been named as well. You know, it could be, again, this is pure speculation, but it could be that the development is actually, no, they're not taking over, but this other group is going to take a stake, or, you know, two groups are going to get involved. We just don't know at this stage. And really, you know, it will be unfair and a bit irresponsible to speculate too widely on that.
Yeah. But at present, you know, Stuart Donald is the majority shareholder and calls the shots. If another group comes in, be it, you know, the MSD people or whoever else, they will be the owners. And Stuart Donald, if he's still here, will be a minority shareholder, which means he'll basically have to do what they tell him. So while Stuart Donald might still be here for a new owner, might still be a presence in the boardroom, he won't be the person calling the shots. So you know, that's the important thing in a board, not who's on it, but who owns what. So yeah, it's still uncertain for a manager, even if Stuart Donald says, well, I'll still be here, and say, yeah, but will you be the one making the decisions?
Mm. Yeah. And just in terms of looking at the hypothetical situation that this takeover does collapse and the FPP group don't take over Sunderland and there isn't another group at this stage ready to take over Sunderland, in the short term, financially, is the club okay under Stuart Donald's ownership?
I think Stuart Donald's been very clear that they do have the resources, you know, to be a League One club. This is about them being a Championship club. And, you know, James has mentioned, you know, the lack of investment in the transfer market in the summer, but they still paid a fair amount in wages, you know, and we fans can be critical of them signing free transfers, but some of the best signings the previous summer were free transfers as well. I think any manager who takes over Sunderland now, you know, if the situation is as it is, cannot complain about the resources he's got to work with. The thing that is really crippling the club now is not lack of investment, it's lack of certainty.
Mm.
And that's really where they need to get to, I feel.
Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, Stuart Donald's always said that they can afford to keep running the club in League One, that the slimming down and the cutbacks that they've made have made the losses affordable. I don't know anything to the contrary of that. So, you know, I'm taking him at his word there. So yeah, I don't see any reason to doubt that as it stands. But what we do know is that there isn't enough money there to put in major investment, to recapitalise the club, which is what it has needed all this time. And that's why from the very moment that Stuart Donald and Charlie Methven walked through the door, they've been seeking backers because they needed more financial muscle. They've, in some ways, they've bitten off a bit more than they can chew, and they need some help with that, and they still need help today.
And just to kind of recap on that then, I mean, regardless if we get a takeover or not, surely going forward for Sunderland, what has to improve, if you like, has to be the plan going forward. There has to be a better plan. Certainly with recruitment and things like that. That's ultimately whether they've got a lot of money through a takeover or whether they're still on the finances that there are now. That's going to be the key to success, isn't it? The kind of the plan and the recruitment side of things.
I think in fairness, there's been a fairly clear plan. There was a fairly clear plan last season in terms of the type of players that they brought in. I think the issue has been that during the transfer window, that plan pretty much had to be suspended because we didn't know who was coming in. You know, James has said, Mark Campbell had a different plan.
Yeah.
And you've got Jack Ross and the recruitment team not knowing which plan they're going to be following, yeah, you know, a week, 2 weeks into the window. And that's why I say certainty is really essential. And, you know, in fairness to Donald, it has caused problems, him searching for investment this summer. But imagine if he'd waited until he went up to the Championship. These problems would probably be undermining Sunderland's chances of staying in the Championship. This season this first half of the season might just be a painful process Sunderland have to go through to get the house in order so that when they do go up, they're able to hit the ground running in a way that, in fairness to Jack Ross, he wasn't able to do in either of the last two summers for different reasons.
Yeah, I agree with that, yeah.
Yeah, so certainty and stability for Sunderland is what we need going forward. Thanks very much to everybody for listening to this podcast. Hopefully in the coming days, perhaps weeks, we will have more certainty surrounding the new manager and the takeover. And you can be sure that we'll be with it every step of the way on Chronicle Live. So make sure you're with us every day on the site and on our social media channels for all the latest news. Thanks very much.